You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mahmoud, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 231 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. This is Seth hosting this week, and unlike most times, I'm alone. But you don't have to listen to me monologue for half an hour, which is fantastic news for everybody. I'm actually joined by two guests, Pam and Andy. And Pam and Andy just launched a new website, newsletter, travel guide. They're going to explain it better than I can because they actually did it. It's called The Statesider, and we're going to talk about some destination stuff this week and see where we end up. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Given my terribly mediocre introduction, does one of you want to try to do a better job of actually explaining what Statesider is so our listeners can figure that out?
Andy, I want to let you go because you wrote the initial email that started the project.
Sure. I mean, we can step back a little bit. Pam and I have both worked in the travel industry for quite a long time. I used to be at Lonely Planet as a U.S. digital editor and commissioned stories from Pam back in the day. So we've known each other for a long time and we've known the industry for a long time. And it struck me at some point that the U.S. as a destination is sometimes a bit underserved when you come to looking at the travel media. And I think part of the inspiration for us was really that there's just so much interesting going on around the country. And yet when you open a travel magazine, a lot of it tends to be looking abroad or looking at a very specific type of travel, often luxury travel. And there's a real hole in the coverage for the U.S. The interesting stories are happening all around the U.S. So one of the things that drives what we're doing with the Statesider is that we know that there's a lot of great stories coming out around the country. They're just scattered very widely. So we figured if we could jump into the hole there and provide a service where we can round up some of the great stories that are happening across the U.S. that your average traveler might not find because they're not looking for it. They're not spending the time that we are or having or reading all the travel magazines that we are and local newspapers that we are. That we could bring it all into one place and provide a handy way just to see what's going on around the country, what's interesting around the country, and provide a new take on American travel.
Yeah. So your goal is U.S. travel for people already in the U.S.?
Not necessarily. It looks like our current readership demographic, because we've already become stats-obsessed weirdos, that our current demographic is U.S. only. However, that is not necessarily our goal. A lot of what gets published in the foreign press as well has there's an interesting and different take on it than the U.S. press provides. So we can provide United States press, small local newspaper stuff to international readers, and we can provide international press to the U.S. readers as well, right? So we're not looking just at U.S. sources for our stories, and we're not looking just at U.S. readers as the audience. It just happens that statistically that's where we are right now.
And I think in some cases it's really interesting to see the take from someone from another country who comes to the U.S., and what they bring to their view of the U.S. and the trip that they're taking, and sometimes you get some really interesting perspectives. So I think
Give me an example of one of those. I'm curious. I mean, I certainly could imagine that you're going to get some interesting perspectives. But I also, when I sort of think about international inbound travel, I think that it's people going to California, Florida, New York, D.C. You know, the coastal stuff, the big cities, things like that. Is there more to it than that you're seeing?
Oh, well, definitely. And actually, an example just came up this last week. There's a movie that is traveling around the country right now. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the name is called The Bikes of Wrath.
And
it's a group of Australian travelers, cyclists of one sort or another. Some of them are experienced and some of them are not, who came to the U.S. to recreate the travels in the Grapes of Wrath today, given using the same amount of money, I assume adjusted for inflation, I'm not sure, but not very much money, traveling across the country in the same route as travel in the Grapes of Wrath. And so there's a movie that you can Google this, I'm sure, the Bikes of Wrath, that's showing at various places around the country. And that's an interesting perspective from abroad on a very, very American historical story.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a great example of exactly what I was thinking of, something that's just weird and different and that certainly I had never heard of. So, well done.
are we doing our jobs?
We've cleared the first hurdle, Andy.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Came up with something Steph hasn't heard of.
It's
a pretty low hurdle, I'm afraid, but we'll go with it.
That's all right.
Yeah. You know, I guess my next question sort of down the same path of the content stuff is, you know, I know you guys are doing an email newsletter. Is that going to be the core of the operation? Is that a email plus web? How are you going to end up presenting all this information together for folks?
Email is going to be our primary format. That's how we hope to reach most people. We're doing email plus web as a platform, but mm-hmm. email is the point of contact by which we hope to do most of our interaction.
Okay. So I got to give you my email address in order to get the good stuff.
You do, but you should trust us with it because we are not planning to sell it. We are not planning, and we are not planning to fill your inbox with junk. As recipients of, as people who have travel inboxes, we know. We know what that looks like. So we're really not, we have no goal to grab your attention for garbage. We really want to give you good stuff. We want you to enjoy getting the newsletter.
Awesome. And how often am I going to get that email?
That's a good question that we don't totally know the answer to yet.
This morning, for example. So we've got one.
Yeah, that's our second one. We initially thought that we would do them monthly, but we dropped this second one 2 weeks in because we were kind of enthused about what we were finding. It's Black History Month, and we really wanted to get an issue out that had stories about Black history and travel. So I think for now it will be maybe every 2 weeks, maybe once a month, but we really don't know.
We were kind of responding to the volume of what we found out there because we didn't want to send anything if it wasn't interesting. And we're really finding that if you're looking for it, there's plenty out there to curate into something that holds together and is interesting I don't want to say a weekly basis because we're not going to sign up for that, honestly, because we have jobs, but the biweekly is definitely doable.
Yeah, no, certainly coming up with a schedule of sort of moderated content, handling all that stuff is always a challenge. I've tried a couple times and failed miserably. So, just that I got overwhelmed with everything else going on, but I was also trying to do it like daily. So that was
right.
Terrible.
Oh, yeah, we're not doing daily. And it's important to us not to overwhelm, you know, because again, we're on the receiving end. I'm sure the three of us could share screenshots of our inboxes and they would look shockingly similar and messy.
Yeah.
And so we want it to be a thing that people are like, oh, good, that's here. I missed that, rather than, oh, God, that again. So we're going for that.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit. I know, Pam, I know some of your travels more just because of following you on Twitter and whatnot. But you have done, in the last couple of years, a decent amount of U.S. tourism. And I am somewhat embarrassed to admit that I sort of don't. I went to the Grand Canyon for the first time, I think, last year. But other than that, like most of my U.S. travels have been to a city for a meeting where I stay in the city or stay at the airport and then do my meeting and then leave. So what am I missing?
Wow, so much. I've done, there are maybe three trips that come to mind over the last couple of years, maybe four. I don't know. I went to the Mississippi Delta and I spent 10 days driving around by myself. I went to Indiana, to Muncie, Indiana for 4 days for a conference, but I spent some time exploring while I was there. I went to Missouri, Springfield, and Branson, and I also drove around a little bit and saw a show. And this is very, this is just the factual stuff about where I went. And then Andy and I went to Elko, Nevada for the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering, which is kind of where the Statesider, this is a little bit of a Statesider origin place, I think what we'll call it, at the birthplace of the Statesider, Elko, Nevada. What you're missing is the opportunity to experience the complexity and diversity of the American landscape and American culture. We are so rich here. It is really quite remarkable. And it's really easy for us to become dulled to how interesting our own country is when we're drawn to places like Prague and Budapest, which we think have richer history than our own, and we are wrong about that. There's so much going on. The Mississippi Delta is probably some of the best travel I've done in years, and that includes international travel. It had all the markings of great travel. The food was incredible. The people were so friendly and so welcoming, but also extremely inscrutable in ways that I did not understand because I am a Yankee from the Northwest corner. So their experiences were vastly different than mine, but we could share a common language to trade stories. So I had a lot of very meaningful interactions while I was there. I got to re-experience the great history of American music because that is the birthplace of the blues. That's just scratching the surface, right? That's before we get into the like weird details of my travel. I was in a place which was basically just a railroad crossroads, and it's a old juke joint, and the guy, there's a guy sitting, an old blues man sitting on the front porch as though he was waiting for me to get there at 10 in the morning. And he opened the door to this juke joint and put a quarter in the jukebox for me. And he sort of whacked the jukebox and said, "You know what? You will very rarely find a working jukebox anymore." And this divey roadside bar just filled with music, me and this old blues guy at 10 a.m. on a weekday. I was like, "Where am I? What is even happening?" It's magical, right? Yeah. And those are the kinds of experiences that we seek when we travel, or we hope to stumble upon when we travel, and we think that those are limited to foreign lands, and they're really not. They happen right here in our own backyards.
Well, so you just used a word there that I think in some ways is really interesting and ties in for me, is in foreign lands. I grew up in North Florida, so I'm, you know, the Mississippi Delta is not exceptionally foreign to me, but I've spent the last 20-odd years of my life living in New York and New England. And so in that context, going to the Mississippi Delta, going to Elko, Nevada, is a foreign land in some ways. Certainly, I don't need a passport to get there. But are we just screwing up in terms of what we are defining as foreign versus local or familiar?
Well, it's very different than what I'm used to. So in the context of this usage, I would say yes, right? The Delta was very different from anything I was used to. And also, you know, I was in Muncie, Indiana, and that was also very different in different ways than any place I have been, because I live, again, in the northwest corner, which is a very lefty, progressive, sort of diverse in a very odd way kind of place. And Muncie and Missouri, Branson, Missouri, not so much so. So they're very different from what I'm used to. And if the goal of travel is to find yourself someplace different, you don't have to get on a plane to leave the United States to find yourself different, someplace so vastly different. So you could get in your car and drive to Elko and then be like, "Wow, this place is so different from where I live." And I don't know, how long was the drive for you, Andy? 6 hours?
5 or 6 hours, yeah.
You know, so...
And you know, I'm talking to you here from California. We're both West Coasters. And Elko, Nevada is not that far away in terms of distance. And it's in the West. But it makes you realize when you get there that, you know, I think of myself as a Westerner, but I'm west of the West, with the capital W, because Elko is definitely the capital W West, and the culture is just so different there. And you don't even have to go quite as far as Elko. And one of the inspirations for this project, for the Statesider, was that the realization that most Americans don't travel internationally, and so something like 85% of all leisure trips are domestic trips, and some of them are really close to home. I did a story a few months back for the San Francisco Chronicle on a town called Locke in the Sacramento Delta, which is less than an hour away from where I live, and it couldn't be culturally more different and unusual. Locke is actually the last rural Chinatown in the U.S. was built entirely by Chinese labor for Chinese residents, and retains its Chinese history. It has the Chinese New Year celebration coming up this weekend. And it's such an unusual place. Like, you know, I'm living in, you know, very urban Bay Area, and go an hour away, and it feels like you're walking into, going back to the Grapes of Wrath. Someone that I ran into there actually thought they were on the movie set for the Grapes of Wrath. It looked like it's something out of a different time, a different place, and just so close by.
Yeah, that is very interesting to me. You know, you're talking about those types of developments, and I'm thinking back. I was in Antigua when they opened their new airport a couple of years ago, and there was a similar Chinese work camp set up there, but it's the modern era version, where it's because the Chinese money and Chinese companies built that airport. It's the same idea. It's just, you know, 100 years later, 150 years later.
Right.
Right.
Far off we are. Yeah, so, but knowing that those sorts of things still exist in the United States, I guess, is a good eye-opening sort of situation.
The other interesting thing about Elko was that we ate some diner meals, and some of them were very bad, and we ate some. What was that restaurant where we had that great meal? Were they Palestinian, Andy?
I believe that's right. Yeah.
Right, and that was the, so we had that amazing Palestinian food, Middle Eastern. I think they were Palestinian, and then we had really good the pinchos, the Basque food.
Right, that's right.
Right, and this is in Elko, Nevada, which is a legit cowboy mining town. So there are these weird cultural threads that you can follow. You know, you could get on a plane and go to Spain and drive north into the Basque region, or you could also get genuinely authentic, delicious, perfect Basque food in Elko, Nevada, which is odd and wonderful.
Yeah, and I certainly used to joke when I lived in New York City that I didn't eat sushi west of the Hudson.
Right. Right. Right.
Because I was snotty and obnoxious, and yeah. we'll pretend it's a past thing now. But
yeah.
We all know the truth. But yeah, I mean, even in random small town New Hampshire where I live now, it turns out we have a pretty good sushi place and a pretty good Indian place. We're working on some of the other things. And a pretty good falafel bar shop too, though. So, you know, it is interesting to me to sort of think about it's not always good. You don't always necessarily find those things, but around the country, you certainly can find them if you start searching for them.
Right. You can be willing to be surprised, and then you can be, rather than just being like, oh, it's not going to happen. We're going to get nothing but cold waffles. And that doesn't necessarily happen. What can happen is you end up having amazing, like the dessert that we had at this Palestinian place. Andy and I are still kind of talking about it.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Right?
Yeah, that.
Tell me more.
There was this. It's called a halba. It's like a fenugreek seed olive oil cake, mm-hmm. which, you know, look up that. I think I've actually found a recipe in the Washington Post from a few years back that I have been meaning to make. So if you're in the market for fenugreek seed as a flavor of your dessert, it was which I didn't know I was up until that moment. it was fantastic. It was really good.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, you teased me about Prague and Budapest because I'm on my way there right now. By the time this episode goes live, I should be sitting in Budapest if everything goes to plan. And so, you know, I argued that I was going to, or joke that I was going to make you convince me that instead of taking my international trips, I should stay and explore more domestic. Is there sort of a parting shot, a real compelling thing you can offer other than, but it's just right here, like it make it easier?
Well, I'm not going to convince you not to go to Prague and Budapest because they're wonderful.
No, my wife would be very upset if I did not show up on our vacation.
Yeah, I just think we tend to think of the other being more interesting and being far away. And I think, and maybe we're just repeating the argument from before, but that you don't really have to have a passport or fly all that way to travel the world, because the world has come to the U.S. in so many different waves over time and created something entirely new. So, like, the Basque cuisine in Elko may not look like the Basque cuisine you get in Spain, but it's mixed in with the ranching roots of Nevada and has its own special thing. So I think it's just you find uniqueness wherever you go in this country, and we get stuck in our little bubbles because our geography is so vast compared to, say, the continent of Europe, that you have to go a little further sometimes to find distinction, but it's there. You just need to look for it.
Yeah, I guess one of the challenges I also think of sometimes is that when I look at airfare and I start sort of looking at like where to go and what to do, if I had $500 to spend on air, you know, or to get for a weekend getaway that was supposed to cover air and hotel, it almost feels like sometimes Europe or Asia can be cheaper to get to just because the airlines are stupid and there's these crazy sales and whatnot out there. And I wonder if that biases my thoughts about it. You know, flying back and forth across the country can be almost as expensive as flying, or more expensive even than, for, you know, me based in New England, a quick trip to Europe can be cheaper than a quick trip to LA or to Nevada. And I wonder about that sometimes. Is that, you know, obviously we can't fix that. It's maybe if we fix that, we just raise the prices everywhere else, not on the short stuff. But is that part of what you think it is, or is it just people don't think about it?
That's a good question. I don't know that I would want data in order to give you an answer to that. But my sense is that if we're talking about disposable income spent on travel, there is this aspirational nature that people want to go and experience this otherness of another place and feel far removed. And they think that the dominant idea is that you think that you have to leave the country to do that. But I can tell you that I have probably never felt as foreign as I felt traveling as I did when I was in Muncie, Indiana. So the idea of that feeling of being displaced, that you know, adrenaline buzz or serotonin bump or whatever it is that travel does to our brains, I think we think that we have to go to Paris to get it. And that's why we look at cheap fares to Paris, $500 to get to Paris versus $500 to get to, say, Fargo. But how different is Fargo, right, from what your daily life is like? I, you know, it's vastly different. So I think at the risk of sounding judgy, there might be some snobbery around it, right? Like, we're too snobby to consider Fargo as a great destination. Whereas if we're looking to experience that idea of otherness and to be somewhere different so we can learn about a new place and learn about ourselves, we can do that here. It just does not occur to us. We think we have to go to Bangkok. We think we have to go to Saigon. You know, there are all these other places that we think we have to go, and it's just not true.
unless we forget that a $500 ticket anywhere is too much for a lot of American travelers.
Sure.
Yes, so, that's true. Also,
So a lot of people are driving, and if you look at during the era of when we've had cheaper gas for the last while now, that has resulted as part of the reason that the numbers are way up at U.S. national parks. They always attribute that to cheaper gas. I think probably another explanation is Instagram, but I'm not joking. Oh, I honestly think like it's been like the visitation numbers at U.S. national parks have been kind of flat for several decades, and then Instagram comes along and suddenly and gas gets cheap, and suddenly the numbers are going way up. Some of the most popular ones too. They're all people are clustering, but that's getting a little wonky. But the point is that people are often just hitting a car. They're not even thinking about a plane. They're like, where can I drive to? And that's the U.S. You know, and unless you're on near a border,
I'm near a border.
I'm near an ocean. That doesn't quite count, but yeah. I can't drive to Hawaii.
I say I would not suggest driving into the ocean.
No, not today.
No. I mean, I drove up to Montreal 2 weeks ago for work, so I sort of get it, but that was still 6 hours. And in retrospect, even with getting to an airport and dealing with all the inanity of that, I probably would have been better served just flying. So, comes and goes. But yeah, I guess the auto travel idea and the number of different options, especially for folks already sort of not right at a major airport or who have to, fly to a connecting gateway and take that extra, call it 3 to 5 hours of extra time for just getting to an airport that gets you somewhere outside the U.S., I could certainly see that the driving or just taking that short first flight and not connecting onward could solve a lot of those challenges in terms of still getting to explore, but not being overwhelmed with time and cost and other things.
And just another plug for U.S. travel that without getting into politics too much, that this seems like a time that we might want to be exploring the other side of our own country, other sides of our own country, just to get a little bit more understanding. If people are feeling division in our country, it might be because you're staying in your bubble. So that's a plug for going out and talking to people that have different views and different lives than yourself.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Alrighty, I think we're going to wrap up on that thought. I have one follow-up question for the very end, but first off, where are people going to find both of you and find the Statesider?
So the Statesider is statesider.us. Is that right, Andy? Am I getting
that right?
We're new to this.
Statesider.us. I think statesider.com is an apartment complex in Minneapolis or something like that.
Right, anyway, and Statesider is a photographer. We are statesider.us.
Gotcha.
And then on Twitter, we're the_statesider.
Awesome. I will make sure to put those details in the show notes. I have one final question for you, Pam. From some time ago on Twitter, there was a minor catastrophe, and I just have to know.
Have
you replaced your waffle iron yet?
Great question.
So this is a very good question. So, and also, waffles are like when you go on road trips, you go for pancakes and waffles, right? It's diner food.
All the time. Absolutely.
So yes and no. So it was the so my switches are my outlets are ground fault circuit interrupters. They have the little buttons on them, right? And something had popped the circuit. So it turns out, like an idiot, my waffle iron was not actually broken. However, as a result of my posting to Twitter that my waffle iron was broken, I received 2 additional waffle irons as gifts. So not only did I not need to replace my waffle iron, I now own 3 waffle irons. One of them is a standard round, just your round, like the thin waffle.
Sure.
The other is a Belgian waffle iron, which has a flip on it. So it's got a big fat base, and so you can turn it over, which is great if you are waffling things that are maybe not meant to be in the waffle iron. And then the third one is a waffle bowl maker, which means you could make waffle bowls. And then my plan is to make vast amounts of maybe some kind of cookie waffle bowl and eat ice cream out of them come summer.
This is a good plan.
So, yes.
This is an amazing, amazing thing. I was waiting if you were going to come up with a heart-shaped waffle maker. We got one for our wedding.
Right, right.
So I still have that as my option on that front.
No, I now have an abundance of waffle irons, and it's a little bit ridiculous. However, can you have too many waffles? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Well, I look forward to seeing the return of the waffles to your Twitter feed as well, especially the summer with the cookie ice cream ones. That sounds spectacular.
I'm glad they give you pleasure.
Thanks so much to both of you for being on the show this week. For our listeners, you can follow Dots, Lines, and Destinations at Dots, Lines on Twitter or moredotsmorelines.com. Look forward to more U.S. domestic adventures in the near future. Safe travels. Take care.